it is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 307. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap what the Phillies did here at the trade deadline. Not a lot of big action to talk about, but the Phillies made some improvement around the edges. Was it enough? How did Matt Klentak do here at the trade deadline? Also, the Phillies get some tough but not unexpected news about one of their big offseason acquisitions. And we'll talk to MLB.com's Mike Petriello about the trade deadline. We'll get his thoughts on what the Phillies did and some of the other big moves from around Major League Baseball. Plus, I'll have your stat of the week. But before we get into the show, just a reminder to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon, everybody. Become a $5 a month Patreon member of Hittin' Season. You can help support this podcast and everything that we do. And we do give you some bonus content along the way for doing that as well. So go to patreon.com/hittin'season to do that. And if you have not left a rating and a review at the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, I'd ask you to please do that as well, and subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. Tell your friends about it, whether they listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that they get their podcasts. All right, let's get into this trade deadline, and the Phillies did not make the mega move. We were not expecting them to make the mega move. We were not expecting them to do anything earth-shattering, and they didn't. They held true to form. Everything that the Phillies front office had been saying over the past few days turned out to be exactly what they said they were going to do. They made all the moves. The big moves that this team made were in the offseason. That's when they went out and got their stars. That's when they went out and got their core. This trade deadline was all about filling in some of the smaller holes of the, you know, that formulated during the course of the season. And I know there are a lot of people who are not happy with the lack of activity from Matt Klentak in the Phillies front office. I get it. I get that you're not happy. I get that you're upset that they didn't land Zach Greinke like the Astros did, or that they didn't trade for Marcus Stroman like the New York Mets did, that they didn't go out and even get Tanner Roark or Alex Wood or somebody like that. The Phillies did make some moves to try and improve the starting rotation, but it's pretty clear that Klentak's goal here was to add some pieces to the bench, get some more arms in the starting rotation, even if they're not marquee arms, just capable starters without giving anything up. And the Phillies did that. If that was their mandate, they were successful. They didn't give up any of their top prospects. They really didn't give up any prospects at all, because they were trying to fill in some of the bench spots and some of the starting rotation spots. And as you know, they didn't get any big bullpen pieces either. A couple of small bullpen pieces, but with some of the demotions that we've seen from the starting rotation to the bullpen, I think they're hoping that some of those guys turn out to be the big mid-season bullpen acquisitions, like Nick Pivetta, Zach Eflin. We'll get to that here in just a minute. But here's the deal, guys. I mean, Klentak told the beat reporters, "We've been adding for the last 2 months. We can't trade our best prospects all the time. We weren't willing to meet prices on better players." And Klentak was also asked by beat reporters if he's happy with the starting rotation now as it's currently constructed. He said, "This is the group we're going to roll with." That is not a ringing endorsement for the starting five that they have right now, but it might be good enough to win them the wild card. If the Phillies had a minor league system flush with talent, where they could afford to give away their number four and number five prospect, their top pitching prospect, like the Mets did to get Marcus Stroman, then I'd say go for it. But they don't have that kind of farm system, as we've talked about. And what have we seen from this team over the course of the last few weeks that led you to believe going all in at the trade deadline was a good idea? I think what Matt Klentak did here at this trade deadline is fine. I don't have a big problem with what he did. I would have loved to seen them be aggressive and to go get the big name players, but they are too far out to win the division. they are playing for a wild card. And I really want the Phillies to get a wild card. I know people are like, well, they just play a one-game playoff. And, you know, assuming the Phillies would lose that one-game playoff. But if you look at it optimistically, well, sure, but all you got to do is win that one-game playoff. And now all of a sudden you are in the real playoffs. You got to face the Dodgers in the first round. And no, the Phillies are probably not beating. Nobody, I don't think, is beating the Dodgers to get to the World Series. And so, again, are you going to dump some of your best? Do you want to burn Adonis Medina for a prospect that may help you win the wild card, but ends up you having to face the Los Angeles Dodgers in the first round of the postseason? This is just not the year, guys. This is not a World Series contention year. We're seeing that from the core that they've established, that this team does not have it all together yet. And getting a guy at the trade deadline like Marcus Stroman or Zach Greinke would have been helpful, would have been great, but it wouldn't have been worth the cost it took to give them up. Now, could the Phillies have gone out and improved the bullpen a little bit more than they did? Yes. I think that if you're going to criticize Matt Klentak and what they did at the trade deadline, I think not going out and getting a more significant piece for the back end of the bullpen is something you can criticize them for. But let's talk about what they did do. Let's talk about the depth that they did make. And you know, I would have, you know, I think that getting Corey Dickerson to be a starting left fielder or to be a bench bat, whatever he ends up being, they got him for a player to be named later and some international slot money. And I know Corey Dickerson, again, is not a sexy name. It's not Nicholas Castellanos. But he didn't cost the Phillies anything. And he's a good player. It's a little bit redundant with Jay Bruce on the team. I get that. But Dickerson is a better fielder. He won the Gold Glove last year. And he's an outstanding hitter when healthy. And that's a big thing. When healthy. He has missed time over the last few seasons. 30 years old, Corey Dickerson is hitting .317. Was hitting .317 with a .931 OPS for the Pirates this year. Had 18 doubles and 4 homers in just 141 plate appearances. So he has missed some time. And Matt Klentak said that he has a groin injury right now, and they're going to ease him back into action. But the Phillies also think he can play some center field. Dickerson has hit .293 the last three seasons with an OPS of .823. He'd already be one of this team's best hitters. And he has been red hot in July. He's at .328 with a .391 on-base percentage. Now, he's going to hit in the middle of the lineup most of the time, especially as long as Bruce is out. And then one of those guys will be the bench bat, and one of those guys will be in the starting lineup most nights. And it'll probably be Bruce on the bench for the most part, but we'll see. Just because, you know, Bruce is not as good a fielder as Dickerson is. Dickerson will likely play left field most nights when he's in the starting lineup. You'll probably see Adam Haseley in center field and Kingery at third base or second base. You might see Kingery in center field some as well. But they're going to mix and match. They're going to move guys around. And, you know, Dickerson's a good hitter. He's the kind of hitter this team needs in the middle of the lineup, a consistent guy who hits for a good average, has some pop, gets on base. Maybe they hit him at the top of the lineup once in a while. He did that occasionally for the Pirates. He's not a super high on-base guy. He's kind of like a .328, .340 on-base guy type of guy. But that's better than what they've been getting at the top of the lineup. Scott Kingery has struggled tremendously in the leadoff spot. Cesar Hernandez has struggled tremendously in the leadoff spot. They need an answer there at the top of the lineup. Maybe Corey Dickerson is that guy. But it's a solid move. This team needed help with the bench. They needed an upgrade over Nick Williams off the bench. And he gives them that. And he gives them a little bit more length in the lineup while Jay Bruce is recovering from his oblique strain. And we're not sure when Bruce is coming back. They think it's going to be relatively soon, but we've seen with Phillies players and injuries this year, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. So we don't know exactly when Bruce is coming back, and Dickerson can help this lineup. He's not a superstar, but that's not what the Phillies were ever going to do. They were not going to get a superstar bat here at the trade deadline. Let's talk about Drew Smyly. Smyly was not a trade deadline pickup, but he was one of the guys added here over the last couple of weeks during trade season, so I'm going to include him here. And in his first two starts with the Phillies, he's been unbelievable. He's pitched 13 innings, given up one earned run, and struck out 13 hitters in his first two outings for the Phillies. He's reminiscent of Cliff Lee in 09, to be honest. He's not Cliff Lee, but his first two starts match up pretty well with what Lee did in his first two starts with the Phillies in 2009. Lee went 16 innings in his first two starts. Smyly went 13 innings. Lee gave up 10 hits. Smyly, 8 hits so far. Lee, 2 earned runs. Smiley, one earned run. Both guys gave up three walks. Lee struck out 15. Smiley has struck out 13. Very comparable numbers. Is Smiley going to pitch like Cliff Lee did in 2009 for the rest of 2019? I doubt it. But Smiley is doing some things differently. As Megan Montemuro from The Athletic noted, he's using his fastball far less with the Phillies than he had with the Rangers earlier this season. He was throwing his four-seamer 52% of the time. He's only throwing it 37% of the time now. And the Phillies have gotten him to use his cutter way more. 29% of the time this year he's using his cutter in his two starts. His two starts with the Phillies. But that's way up from 11% that he had been using it. They're also throwing the curveball a bit more, and they've abandoned the changeup. They've made him a three-pitch pitcher. Basically, they've made him a fastball cutter guy. Mostly a cutter guy. But 37% fastballs, 30%, we're rounding up, 30% cutters, and about, you know, the remainder are curveballs. He's the first pitcher, other than Aaron Nola, to go seven innings in a start since Zach Eflin on June 12th. So, I mean, this is a guy who has been productive, and they got him for nothing. Will he be a number two or number three starter in this rotation for the rest of the year? Probably not. But it was going to cost so much to get a guy like that. And the Phillies, again, did not prove that they were a team good enough, worthy enough to get somebody that big. The Phillies picked up Jason Vargas from the Mets. I'm not a big Jason Vargas fan. This is not a sexy move. But he has been very good for New York. He's been better than anyone on the Phil staff this year other than Aaron Nola. He has a better strikeout rate this year, 7.7 strikeouts per nine, than Eflin, 7.3. Since last August, August 14th, Vargas has a 3.56 ERA in 27 games, 26 starts. When you compare that to Marcus Stroman, Stroman is at 3.45. Vargas is almost right there with Stroman, and the prospect cost was minuscule compared to what the Mets had to give up to get Stroman. The Phillies will pay him $8 million. Well, he's owed $8 million this season, so obviously the Phillies pay a prorated portion of that, and they have a team option of $8 million to keep him next year or pay him a $2 million buyout. So the Phillies have a little flexibility here with Vargas if he pitches well. And I know he was in the news this year negatively for threatening a journalist in New York after a heated exchange with Mickey Callaway that this reporter had. And by all accounts, it was an isolated incident that Vargas is not generally that kind of guy. We'll see how he fits into the locker room. That was a big problem last year. Guys fitting into the locker room properly after Klintak did a lot of wheeling and dealing last trade deadline. That didn't work out so well, did it? I don't think Klintak and the Phillies wanted to screw up their clubhouse chemistry or whatever it is they have going on in the clubhouse also. And so making these moves around the edges, telling the core that, you know, listen, you guys have to do the job here. Adding a bunch of big name players at the trade deadline that we saw last year doesn't necessarily fix things. And like I mentioned, the bullpen deals the Phillies made, I think they probably could have gotten a better bullpen arm than they got. The Phillies signed Blake Parker and Mike Morin to deals as well. They didn't trade for either one of these guys. Parker was outstanding in 2007 and 2018 with the Angels with a 2.54 ERA and a 3.26 ERA the last two seasons. He had 11.5 strikeouts per nine in 17, down to 9.5 in 18. So this year, he's lost some zip on his fastball. The ERA is 4.21. His FIP is 5.35. The strikeout rate down again, 8.4 strikeouts per nine. The walks up to nearly four walks per nine. I'm not sure what the Phillies are going to get here. But he does have some late-game experience, 24 saves combined the last two seasons. But I'm not, you know, if Parker can recover some of what he had in 17 and 18, then great. I'm not convinced we're going to see that from him. And, you know, this is important. Because if Smiley and Vargas work out, then the demotions of Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin hopefully work as bullpen additions. Pivetta gave up two home runs in his inning of work in the series opener against the Giants, and he looked really good before that. Everybody was very excited about that, and then he gave up a couple of long balls, which has been his problem this year. So the jury is still out on Pivetta as a late-inning bullpen arm, but I think he has the stuff to do it. I'm excited to see what he can do in the back of that bullpen. Eflin pitched in the eighth inning of the game on Wednesday night and didn't look great doing it in relief, but he's never done relief pitching before. So you kind of have to wait and see how that's going to go. I think the Phillies are hoping that these two high-quality arms can provide help in the bullpen, saving them the prospect capital of trading for a bullpen piece. But the Nationals and Braves both upgraded their bullpens in big ways at the trade deadline. Washington acquired Daniel Hudson from the Blue Jays and left-handed reliever Ronis Elias from the Mariners. Neither player cost the Nats a top prospect. The Braves got Tigers closer Shane Green and Mark Melancon from the Giants. Green is a 1.18 ERA this year, 22 saves and 25 chances for the Tigers. He's their lockdown guy now. Melancon has a 3.50 ERA this season and 183 career saves. They also got Chris Martin, who had a 3.08 ERA and a 1.03 WHIP with the Rangers this year. So the Nationals and Braves both drastically improved their bullpens. The Phillies did not. That is the one argument I would have with Matt Klentak. Why not pursue more bullpen help? I realize the Phillies have gotten burned with veteran bullpen arms, but they don't have the youngsters in hand to step up. And maybe they get Sir Anthony Dominguez back at some point. Who knows? But I hope Pivetta can do the job at the back of the bullpen, but he's never done it before, neither has Eflin. I think this is an area the Phillies could have added somebody, a decent middle reliever. They could have gone out and gotten Mark Melancon if they'd wanted to. They didn't want to. They chose not to. They could have gone out and they could have gotten Daniel Hudson if they'd wanted to, and they didn't want to. And that I don't quite understand. That's a move I don't quite understand, especially in light of the fact that we learned on Wednesday that David Robertson is now officially out for the season and could be out for all of 2020 as well. He's going to have elbow surgery to fix the flexor strain that he has. He could require Tommy John surgery. It's really disappointing news because Robertson seemed optimistic before the All-Star game that he would be able to return to the bullpen by the end of July. And had that happened, that would have acted as a big deadline acquisition. But over the last few days, the team kind of grew more and more discouraged that he would be able to make it back. And then he officially made the announcement on Wednesday, just 15 minutes before the trade deadline expired, that he was going to have season-ending surgery. And if he needs Tommy John, he'll be out for 2020 as well. His career could be over, given his age. Robertson signed a two-year, $23 million deal with the Phillies this offseason. This is going to be, if he misses all of next year, it's going to be the Danny Tartable signing times 20. I mean, Danny Tartable was signed for like a one-year, $2 million contract, and we still talk about the fact that he got like three at-bats with the Phillies and then shut it down after fouling a ball off his foot for the rest of the season. You know David Robertson is disappointed in this. He's not shutting it down because he's lazy and doesn't want to be a part of this team. It's incredibly unfortunate and unlucky. But it's also a huge waste of cash and expenditure. And, you know, the Phillies could have made a different decision this offseason, hindsight being 2020. I mean, I think the Phillies made a decision that made a lot of sense at the time. But they got 6 2/3 innings out of him this season with a 5.40 ERA. With 6 strikeouts and 6 walks for $11.5 million this year. And when you look at all the money the Phillies have spent on veteran relievers, they got a combined 30 innings from Robertson, Pat Neshek, and Tommy Hunter this year, all of whom are now out for the season, paying them a combined $26.75 million. That's about $891,000 per inning pitched this season. And really, it's the irony is thick that Robertson was targeted by this team last winter specifically because of his durability and consistency. He had made at least 60 appearances every season since 2010 and had never posted an ERA higher than 3.82. He was a machine. But machines break down. And it just so happens as soon as David Robertson put on the Phillies laundry, he broke down. So with the 2020 season in question, it's very possible the Phillies will have paid Robertson $23 million for 7 appearances and no saves over the entirety of his deal, which is a devastating blow for a team looking for answers in the later innings. And that's why I'm surprised they didn't go out and get somebody at the trade deadline. And there's no August waiver deadlines. This is it. This is your team, guys. This is your team for 2019. The core is going to have to play better. Smiley and Vargas are going to have to improve on what Velasquez and Pivetta were giving them. And I still don't know what they're going to do with Jake Arrieta and his bone spurs. I don't see how Arrieta lasts the season. So it's a big mess. But the Phillies are an 85 to 87 win team. That's kind of what this team is. That might be enough to get them in the wild card conversation, and maybe we get a playoff series out of it. But this is what Matt Klentak and the Phillies decided to do. I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's meh. You know, that's what this is. It's meh. It's okay. I get it. I understand why they did what they did. I like that they still have their prospects. You know, they can make trades in the offseason if they want to, but they can also improve the rotation with Spencer Howard in the rotation next year. That may be the big offseason addition. Because there's not much else. There's not much out there in terms of free agency next year. You have Gerrit Cole, who every team is going to be after. The Yankees are going to sign him to a huge deal. And, you know, you've got Madison Bumgarner. I'm not signing Madison Bumgarner to a free agent deal. So I don't know how the Phillies are going to fix this rotation for next year, other than to have Spencer Howard in there and hope that maybe Adonis Medina, or they get some, you know, lower tier starting pitcher. I think Wade Miley is a free agent again. I think he signed a 1-year deal with the Astros. I'd go get Wade Miley. I liked him this offseason. He's pitching great for Houston. I'd try that. There are some options, but they're not great. And so this is what the Phillies are in 2019. This is your team, everybody. This is what the Phillies are. I can't blame Matt Klentak for not going all in. I'd much rather have the prospects and have the flexibility moving forward than burn a lot of prospect capital for a chance to win a wild card and possibly just lose a one-game playoff, and now you're out. You have less flexibility for years moving forward as well. I want the Phillies to be aggressive as often as possible. This year was not the year to do it. And so, by the way, after all of the deadline moves were done being made, the Phillies' odds for winning the World Series now 40-1, tied with the A's. They're behind the Astros, Dodgers, Yankees, Braves, Cubs, Twins, Cardinals, Indians, Rays, Red Sox, Brewers, and Nationals. A's and Mets at 40-1. I'm sorry, A's and Phillies at 40-1. The Mets at 100-1, and the Mets were more aggressive at the trade deadline than the Phillies were. Mets obviously looking ahead towards 2020 as well with the deadline moves that they made. So up next, we're going to talk to Mike Petriello about what the Phillies did, and we're going to talk to him about all the other moves that were made during the course of the offseason. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And to talk a little bit more about the trade deadline, what the Phillies did, and also we'll take a look at what went on around baseball, is the great Mike Petriello from MLB.com. Mike does excellent work also on the StatCast broadcast that you see every once in a while. Fantastic stuff from Mike. Make sure you check out his stuff at MLB.com and follow him on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. Mike, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, especially after a big day like we had on Wednesday. And I'm dying to get into talking about some of the stuff around baseball, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what the Phillies did at the deadline over the last couple of days. Matt Klentak seemed to be making moves around the edges, going out and getting Corey Dickerson, assigning Drew Smyly the other day, trading for Jason Vargas, and then a couple other moves, Blake Parker to the bullpen, some other smaller moves. What did you make of how the Phillies approached the trade deadline this year?
Yeah, a lot of small moves. I'm guessing that Philadelphia baseball fandom and Twitter is not super satisfied by this, because at least from a national perspective, the Phillies are in sort of a weird spot. Like, yeah, most of the things you hear coming out of that team right now are somewhat negative, you know, Arrieta's elbow and, you know, the starting pitching behind Nola. But it's also like, when you hear that, you sort of look at the standings and you expect they're 15 games out. And right now they are half a game out of a wild card.
Right.
Like, they're still very much in it. So, you know, you certainly, especially for a team that spent all this money on Harper and made the big trade for Realmuto and, you know, signed McCutcheon. I know he got hurt. Like, they're very much in a, we need to try to improve now. We're not just going to like punt till next year, nor should they be. So I think, you know, I like the moves on the edges. I think people put too much emphasis on the like one big guy when you don't sort of think about how much the depth moves matter. Like, I like Corey Dickerson a lot. I think that was a really good move. I don't know that they actually did enough though. Like, yeah, I know Drew Smyly was good in his first start, but he's been pretty unproductive for a while. You know, Blake Parker got cut by a team that needed bullpen help, you know, so what does that say about him? So, you know, I like the Dickerson move. It would have been nice if they could have gotten even like a Tanner Roark.
Yes.
I know they got Jason Vargas. I'm not a huge fan of his, especially in that ballpark. They didn't have to be the team that got Greinke, although they should have been the team that got Greinke. Mm-hmm. But even like a Roark or, you know, Alex Wood or somebody who's maybe like a more capable starter, I think would have been nice.
Yeah, I was singing from the hilltops for them to go get Greinke, but the reports that I saw were that he wouldn't waive his no-trade clause to come to Philadelphia. So, I mean, and who knows, if the Phillies agreed to pick up all of the money, how much of the prospects, what kind of capital that would cost and all that. But, that would help the Phillies for future seasons past this year. I loved the Greinke idea. I thought the Phillies made total sense there. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think the big area for me that I wish the Phillies had gone in and gotten was to go get a guy like Tanner Roark or Sonny Gray or something like that. I think they missed an opportunity to do that. I also think fans kind of forget what it's like to root for an 85 to 87 win team. You know, when we remember the Phillies from like 07 and 08, that was kind of what that team was too, with the, you know, a few more wins here and there, but especially in 07, it was a pretty frustrating season up until those last couple of weeks. And in 08, it was a frustrating season up until the end of August. And that's kind of what I think Phillies fans are trying to wrap their heads around. This was a team that a lot of people, a lot of us said could be a World Series contender this year. And they've played like an 85-87 fringe wild card team. And nobody, that's why I think the fan reaction, like you mentioned, it's actually been, I think, a little mixed. You've got a lot of fans who are upset that the Phillies didn't go all in and go get somebody like Marcus Stroman. And a lot of fans, kind of where I am, that believe the Phillies didn't really show enough here over the last few weeks to warrant going high on the hog here at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. But also, you know, like I said, they're only a half game out. You know,
yeah,
it doesn't take much to turn it around. And when you think about Stroman, like, as I kind of think about the entire trade deadline, that deal looks, I think, a lot worse for the Blue Jays now. Like, there are a lot of teams, you know, not just the Phillies, right? The Yankees, certainly, you know, some other teams who I think if they could go back, they might have wished they had gone a little higher for Stroman, because I don't think the Blue Jays got that much. Mm-hmm. And it sure seems like, you know, with what happened and the guys who didn't get moved, Boyd and Bumgarner and everybody, that's a move, you know, I don't think the Phillies would have needed to slice off like their entire farm system to get a guy like that. That's a move that probably could have been redone for a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think it cost the Mets their fourth and fifth best prospect, their best pitching prospect. So, yeah, I don't know exactly how that works out for Phillies prospects, but it's pretty clear Klentak didn't want to meet that price here. And I thought the big area where they really missed out was not improving the bullpen, not going out and getting like a Mark Melancon or something like that, just somebody to help stabilize the middle innings, because especially with the news we got on Wednesday that David Robertson is officially out for the season now, and they've lost Nayshak and Tommy Hunter for the season, Sir Anthony Dominguez, we don't know when he's coming back. Even just to kind of get that wild card, getting a middle reliever or two probably wouldn't have cost them all that much. And I'm surprised that it's Blake Parker and Mike Morin are the two guys that they went out and they signed here and traded for over the last couple of weeks.
Well, it's especially true when you look at the two teams ahead of them in the division, right? I mean,
yeah.
The Braves ate their lunch when it came to relievers. I really like Chris Martin. You know, Shane Green, I'm not as high on as his shiny ERA would show, because he's clearly not that good, but he's an improvement. And like you said, Mark Melancon, and those are three guys who I believe are all better than anybody the Phillies got. You look
yes.
at Washington, none of those three guys are difference makers. You know, Daniel Hudson's on a different team every year. Roenis Elias is fine. But yeah, it's surprising to me the Phillies didn't do a little more of that, because none of those guys, Melancon aside, come with huge contracts, right? And mm-hmm. none of them really required like top prospects. Like, I guess Texas got Colby Allard, but you know, reports on him are a little mixed. Somebody like that, I think, would have really made a big difference. It's not always about getting the Felipe Vasquez's of the world. Sometimes right. it's just about getting a competent to solid to slightly above average reliever, because you go through these guys so fast, you just need someone who can go out there and hold their own. And I like Blake Parker, or at least I did last year, but if the Twins didn't even want to hold on to him, that doesn't give me a lot of good feelings about him.
No, I mean, the velocity's down, the strikeouts per nine are down, the walks per nine are up. I'm not seeing the rush to go get him and say, yeah, that's our bullpen upgrade. And I guess demoting Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin to the bullpen, maybe they're hoping that one of those two guys can stabilize the bullpen, but that's hope as a tactic, and I've never really felt that that's a strong way to go about things. So well, let's look around the majors. You did mention what the Nationals and Braves did, certainly improving their bullpen. That will have an effect on the National League East, and obviously any games the Phillies play against them. It'll be really interesting watching Hunter Strickland now with the Nationals taking on Bryce Harper and the Phillies later on in the season. Looking forward to that one. But obviously the big name that got moved, Mike, is Zach Greinke getting traded to the Houston Astros, and that gives them a wildly fantastic starting rotation. Does it seem to you this trade deadline season that general managers were once again embracing the importance of the starting pitcher, especially in the postseason? We've seen so many general managers gravitate towards improving the bullpen and not so much giving yourself a really great starting trio, but it seems as though the Astros kind of went the other way here.
It's an interesting point. And you might be right, but I'm not sure I fully agree. I think with the Astros, they desperately needed a starting pitcher. You know, that was a clearly defined need for them with the injuries they've had and, you know, just the fact that they were having trouble filling out a rotation, you know, so for them, that made the most sense. I think, you know, the other teams who needed a starter, like the Yankees, obviously could have desperately used a starter. But those guys just weren't out there this year. Like, I think Greinke was a surprise that he even got moved. And then, yeah. You know, nobody thought Bumgarner was going to move, and he didn't. Matthew Boyd, I didn't think was going to move. But the Bauer to Cincinnati trade, that's certainly something else, although I don't think the Astros were ever really in on him. So I still think it's about just finding pitchers to improve your team. And I think in the Astros case, that pitcher had to be a starter just because of their needs. And I think for, you know, the Yankees, that's obviously a huge disappointment. They didn't do that. For the Dodgers, the disappointment was they didn't get a better reliever. I do think it's still team-based, but you're not wrong. You know, when they get to the postseason and now you got to line up against Verlander and Cole and Greinke, and if they need a fourth starter, Wade Miley's been pretty good this year. That is just an absolutely dominant rotation they're going to have now.
And they also picked up Aaron Sanchez, and I guess the idea is he'll be a number five starter during the regular season but get moved to the bullpen probably for the postseason run. Is that the idea, do you think?
I think so. I like him better as a reliever, but you know, it's obviously the guy has to buy into that, you know, and we don't know if he's going to do that or not. But he's a guy I've been kind of watching for a while as like a perfect Astros reclamation project.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He had that magical season like 3 years ago. And now, you know, his sinker is just getting lit up, and he's got a really interesting curveball that he doesn't use enough. And I'm going to watch this one with a lot of interest because I'm almost not sure what I'm rooting for, right? Like if they take him and his 6-something ERA and they turn him around into something useful, like that's really cool. It shows that, you know, the power of the data and how, you know, all the stuff the teams are doing can really help a guy. But I'm also sort of rooting for them not to, because if they do, then everyone's been calling for it in the same way we all called for like Garrett Cole, then it's going to be kind of like, this shouldn't be this easy. You know, like this should be a lot harder than this. I know it's not easy what the Astros have done. It's taken a lot of work, certainly. But if even like we from the outside just kind of go, oh yeah, he's going to go to the Astros and they're going to make him better, that says a lot about the other 29 teams in baseball.
It says a lot about the Phillies, because what's interesting is the Phillies are trying to do exactly what the Astros are doing. They've tried to do it with Nick Pivetta, with Vince Velasquez over the course, and even Zach Eflin to a degree, and they haven't been able to replicate the success that the Astros have. And you wonder, okay, well, is it the pitchers or is it the coaching? And that's been a fascination and a frustration with Phillies fans this year, is trying to figure out, you know, what is it? Is it the talent, the coaching that they're trying to emulate what the Astros are doing? But then again, 28 other teams other than the Phillies are failing to replicate the Astros' success too. So I guess, you know, one of the other teams I can't really understand what they're doing here is the Diamondbacks, because they do trade Zach Greinke, but they hold on to Robbie Ray, and then they go out and they get Mike Leake. They have a great run differential. I think their team is really talented, and they just are kind of stuck in neutral here in the wild card race and stuck between selling and buying. What is Arizona's plan as you're looking at this team?
Yeah, you're right. They're in a weird spot because they took a lot of heat, I think, last winter for trading Paul Goldschmidt away, right? Best player they've ever had, franchise icon. That trade actually looks pretty decent now. Like I know Luke Weaver's injured, but he pitched well, and Carson Kelly looks like a keeper and catcher. I've seen a lot of talk about the Diamondbacks, like you said, the run differential, the underlying numbers, and say, you know, they're better than they look. They should be going for it this year. I'm not sure I believe that. I mean, they have been under 500 or around 500 pretty much all season long. Even right now, they're a game below 500. There are, let's see, three or four teams ahead of them in the wild card race. Mm-hmm. They're certainly not out of it, but I'm just not seeing a lot there that says, you know, this is the time to go for it. Now, if they had traded Greinke and it was just for a salary dump to get out of that contract, then I would not have been okay with that. But that's not what happened. They did get some pretty interesting prospects out of Houston. You know, these are guys who could be part of the next good Arizona team. As far as getting Leake, you know, I think that part of that is just he's a competent pitcher and they need someone to start. He went to Arizona State, you know, so I think there's been a lot of smoke to the fire of him going there for a while. I think in June there was that minute like right before a game where we thought there was a trade to Arizona, so that's not surprising. I really, really liked the trade they made with Miami. This went super under the radar yesterday because they're not named most people know. Zach Cowan for Jazz Chisholm was fascinating. You don't see a lot of prospect for prospect challenge trades. I know Gallon's had a couple starts, but all of a sudden the Diamondbacks have a really interesting rotation, and as talented as Chisholm is, he's really just not performed at all so far this year. So, you know, they go into next year. They still have Ray and now you're Hefke Allen and, you know, Weaver will hopefully be there and Merrill Kelly. I think they're going to be interesting. I think obviously they need to make some moves this winter to improve. They can't just sit still forever. But so far as this year, I did not see the motivation to try to go all in to play the Dodgers in the wild card game. I didn't see them getting there. And I think they are an interesting team with some very good players like Marte, but they're also pretty flawed in a lot of ways.
What was your thought on the another trade that kind of went under the radar, the Marlins and Rays trade with Nick Anderson, Trevor Richards going to the Rays for Jesus Sanchez and Ryan Stanek? I thought that was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, with the exception of the Greinke trade coming out, that was probably the one that shocked me the most. I think most people, you know, don't care about those teams and don't really know about those players. And I guess this says more about how much of a baseball nerd I am, but I saw that trade. I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
I saw a lot of people react that way too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, Ryan Stanek obviously has been like the face of the opener for the Rays. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's not going to make him an untouchable player. But I have to imagine he was shocked to be traded away from them. So like, he's an interesting guy. As you said, Sanchez is a very good prospect. I think he was the number four prospect for the Rays, and that's a very good farm system. Not enough people know Nick Anderson. He is a guy who is like top 10 in strikeout rate, and he's also like in the worst percentile in hard hit rate. He's kind of got like Josh Hader syndrome almost, where he's like, you can't touch him, but if you do, you can pound him. And I think that's the kind of guy that the Rays can really, you know, make a lot out of. And then you have Trevor Richards, who I always forget which one's Trevor Richards and Trevor Williams, but one of the Trevors they got. And, you know, he has been good in the past, obviously struggled a bit this year. So I don't know that deal is like a needle mover in any way, but there are four interesting guys there. These are not just like space fillers, and between teams that are, you know, in a very interesting spot in the baseball stratosphere. So I really just had a lot of fun breaking that one down.
Mike, last one for you. So, I mean, I know the Dodgers didn't do a whole lot to get Jed Jerko from the Cardinals, but they didn't get a high-impact reliever that they had been looking for. And so I was looking at the updated World Series odds. They have the Astros are at 2-1 favorites to win the World Series, the Dodgers at 3-1. You have the Yankees at 6-1, Braves at 9-1, Cubs 14-1, and then down from there. Now we know what these teams look like. There's no August trade deadline. There's no waiver deadline. That these teams are fully formed now. There might be some prospects that come up, but for the most part, this is going to be it. Who do you think have the best rosters in baseball right now? Is it the Astros, Dodgers, and then everybody else?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I know that's kind of just like, you know, looking at the chalk here, right?
It's like, no duh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I hate to be too obvious about it, but yeah,
too.
I mean, listen, I don't want to undersell the Yankees. I know they didn't get the starter everybody wanted, but that is still a really good lineup with a really good bullpen, and, you know, they'll get Severino and Betances back and Giancarlo Stanton, and that's not nothing, right? Yeah. They're still really good.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Twins have been great. I really liked what the Indians did with that Bauer trade.
Yeah, good deal for them.
I mean, everybody in the time leading up to the deadline, we're saying, oh, how can the Indians sell one of their best pitchers? They're in a playoff spot. This is a debacle. And again, if they had just done it to get out from underneath some contract, I would agree with you totally. But they traded a pitcher who obviously has a lot of, you know, off-field controversy from a position of depth, and they got a couple of really good outfielders and a back-end starting pitching prospect too. So I don't want to sleep on the Indians. But to your point, yes, the Astros look incredible now with their starting rotation, and even if they can get something out of Sanchez, and I like Joe Biagini a lot, that's really good. And the Dodgers have been basically the best team in baseball all season long. And what I think people forget, and I'm not trying to excuse them for not going out and getting the reliever that they desperately needed, but if you look at the World Series winners the last 2 years, right, the Red Sox and the Astros, they have both in the postseason gotten a lot of good relief work out of starting pitchers.
Yep.
And I don't know that that's necessarily like the sustainable strategy that you want. But we all know that when the Dodgers get to the postseason, Kenta Maeda is going to be coming out of the bullpen. Maybe Rich Hill, because he's injured, but he's supposed to be back. We don't know how much he'll be stretched out. So if you can still go into the postseason and the top three of your starting rotation is Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, and Hyunjin Ryu, and then behind them you've got, you know, Jansen and Pedro Baez and Maeda and Hill and Julio Urias and Adam Kolarik, who is actually like a huge ground ball guy that just got from Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. And I know nobody wants to think about this. Joe Kelly's been great for like 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, he's starting to look like the Joe Kelly we saw last year. Again, they didn't get the guy they needed. I would not have given up Gavin Lux for Felipe Vasquez if that was the ask. If it was a lesser ask, I probably would have. There's no time like the present to go for it. But I do think that pretty clearly the Dodgers are the best team in the NL and the Astros are the best team in the AL. Doesn't mean we're not going to end up seeing a Twins-Braves World Series or whatever. but for me, yeah, it's those two. And then after that, let's say the Yankees and Twins, and then everybody else.
Given the Dodgers' luck, man, I can't imagine what that franchise, what that fan base will do if they lose another World Series to the Astros, man. That's just going to
be... I tell you what, I'm already sick about hearing Buffalo Bills comments.
Oh my gosh, that's a great comparison. I didn't even think about that. Well, listen, everybody, make sure you check out Mike Petriello's work at MLB.com. Follow him on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. Mike, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Take care.
And now it's time for your stat of the week. The last Phillies left-handed pitcher before Drew Smyly to go seven or more innings and not allow a run, Cole Hamels in his no-hitter on July 25th, 2015. And folks, that will do it for episode number 307 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Mike Petriello for coming on the podcast. A reminder, if you want to check out our Patreon and be a Patreon member of Hittin' Season, go to patreon.com/hittin'season and tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Make sure they subscribe and leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that they get their podcasts. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.